Okay, let's start with part B. I suspect you didn't need a break, but my throat did. I actually stalled on doing this recording, hoping the bad air would clear up and my throat would be less unhappy. But that's not to be, so rasping on, unfortunately. We're at page 20 on the lecture slides. This is an old slide from the 80s, actually. If my handwriting was this good, you'd regret me not being at the board. I assure you, I can barely read my own printing. So losing my board annotations is not the worst artistic loss. Okay, so starting page 20, we're actually going to get going and doing things. I'm sure you had enough of prelude, but it's good to at least give people a running start. Okay, so page 21 of the PDF is the back page of the four-page handout, which you may want to print off, and it starts us actually doing something, talking about individual trajectories, and then we're going to go on and do collections of individual trajectories and comparison of collections and trajectories for experimental or non-experimental groups, etc., etc. So learning curves, growth curves, notation. There is no general notation. You'll see I'll use a couple just because historical inconsistencies, or just to get used to the fact there's no universal notation. We do have data, and that's a measurement y, which can be noisy, linked to a time point. And of course, when we have more than one person, more than one unit, we'll have to keep track of the unit also. So YT can be an error of arrow, contain measurement error, whether it's height, weight has a little bit of error, hormone assays, and cognitive achievement tests have a lot of error. We will model the perfect measurement, hoping that measurement error at least is just pure noise. And perfect measurement often is called eta, the expectation of y if we give the test a lot of times, or we measured height really well a couple times, blood pressure, average 12 times maybe, get a good measure. That's about the eta. That could also be an x of t. It's just different from the noisy actual observed data. We have perfectly measured data, and usually we'll model a time trend in the perfectly measured data, and then the noise gets added on, whether it be a LM or GLM situation. So the simplest kind of individual trajectory, which is also about all you can do with four or five observations, especially if they're a bit noisy, is modeling straight line growth in, let's say, perfectly measured outcome score y of t. So the expectation of y of t is eta, and that's some beginning time at time zero. You may not start at time zero in your data collection, plus a rate of change. We'll call it theta here. Sometimes it's called pi. Sometimes also it gets called eta. Contradicting there. Yeah. Or even alpha. So we have a straight line with a rate of change, whether it be theta or eta. D eta of t, the constant rate of change model, the rate, the derivative is a constant, whether it be theta or eta 1. And an estimate of that is the slope from fitting a simple y on t regression in our talk, LM y tilde t. So we have outcome measure y. We fit a y on t regression, estimate or get ourselves an empirical rate of change with three, four, five observations. It may be as much as you can do. What you've done with the model is smooth the data. And a single parameter rate of improvement is a very convenient thing. So straight line growth curves get used a lot. More complicated would be let there be a quadratic in growth, and therefore the rate of change varies, and you can extend to higher order polynomials. We'll look at the Berkeley growth curve data, and here's a quadratic. A nice fact, and I think it's one of the exercises, that even if you fit a constant rate of change model to something that has a quadratic curvature, you're getting the average rate of change. So that is the average of eta 1 plus 2 eta 2 averaged over the time period is going to be the fit of the straight line slope, and it's a nice thing to prove. And so for counts, we have multiplicative models, and we'll come to that in some detail when we talk about the AIDS data. And then nonlinear growth curves, such as logistic, and how we parameterize that, and how we do nonlinear regression in R. R has extensive capabilities with self-starting functions, SS-logis. And linear state dependence is another simpler kind where the rate of change is linear in how far you have to go to the asymptote. It's called Mitscherlich's equation in agriculture and other things. Sociologists call it linear state dependence. And we have curvature parameter, and we'll look at those too. So those are two nonlinear growth curves, SSA, ASIMP, and we'll have examples of those. But introducing straight line growth curves shouldn't be too much of a leap, or even quadratics, but thinking in terms of getting a rate of change and what can you learn from that for an individual and then collection of individuals is where we are in weeks 1 and 2. And we also keep in mind we have more complicated growth curves, which we'll come back to in week 3. So I'll have examples of all of those today. And that's the main corpus of what I wanted to do in week 1 is just introduce all this, do the preamble stuff, do the course organization, which I separate out of week 0. And that gets us started without blowing people away. Maybe testing some people's patients, but we'll work on that. So the data sets, which is linked as data, is in an unusual form because these are such small data sets. I put them all in one ASCII file, and you can create SDAT, as we'll see, just by pulling it off of the package. The BGS data, you can just grab that, or you can write yourself. The age data is broken up over the 2 pages on PDF page 23, cases per year. You can just grab that in your editor and read it in. And CHIC data for logistic, which is an R staple, beginning of weight. And we only get the first part of the logistic curve, so it's pretty hard to estimate. So those are 4 data examples on lectures pages PDF 22 and 23. And those are the data sets link under part C of lecture topics. So you can just download that and pick them off. The sleep study data. This is going to be our straight line data, and we actually have a link to the original long distance truckers experiment, where our full collection is going to be 18 long distance truckers measured in 10 successive days reaction time, where they only got 3 hours of sleep. Graduate students may be able to relate to that, and watching the reaction times degrade, perhaps, unless somebody prospers under that regimen. So it's a sleep dose response study, came from the Journal of Sleep Research, and Bates uses those as the data in LME4 and in his book, so we'll become familiar with that. It's very, very nice straight line data. So in chapter 4 of Bates's book, he does the sleep study data. And we'll come back to this next week when we actually do real mixed model analyses of the full collection of 18 truckers. Sleep study data. So this is PDF page 25. It's chapter 4 of the chapter by chapter version of the book, which is linked. Sleep deprivation and reaction time for a number of subjects chosen from a population of long distance truck drivers. I think there's music 6 days on the road for you, link someplace, perhaps. Okay, and from Bates' slide, 18 subjects, 10 days trial, subjects reaction time. Just putting forth Bates' slides are very nice. You can flip through them and see them. So sleep deprivation data is going to be our first example. And we're just going to look at Trucker 372. So on PDF page 27, it's just a page from Bates' book. We will learn how to do those plots next week, XY plot. And of course, ggplot can do them in pastels. This is a monochromatic course for Apologies to Hadley Wickham. If you want to do pastels and ggplot, you're more than welcome to. We're just going to monochrome it. Okay, this is a lattice plot by XY plot, and this is old-fashioned R, but a lot of people grew up doing everything in ggplot. So for Trucker 372, we're going to look at separately. You can see the 10 observations line up pretty well. A straight line time trend in that reaction time increases, i.e. reaction capability degrades over successive days of 3 hours sleep. You're not shocked at that. If you want to look ahead, subject 335 seems to prosper under this regimen. You can speculate why. Maybe we'll come back to that next week. But just looking at 372, we're going to pull him off. And there are all males, and take a look at a time trend. Then we're going to look at collections of time trends. There's a logic. Okay, PDF page 28 is just another old slide, straight line growth, which is what we said on the handout, just different notation. Constant rate of change model with a simple straight line. You can also, there's a usefulness, and we'll come back to this when we talk about change in initial status and other things. You can, instead of using zero as the intercept, a centering point for a collection of growth curves is quite useful, but that's getting ahead of ourselves. And it's useful parameterization if you're writing an estimation program like we did in the 80s to do all this, but now there's LMER, you don't need to. So now here is the ASCII of the course handout, the weekly course handout. I have it in simple ASCII, it's easy to read. The PDF version, the four page you have this, or you have the one with my annotations on it. Either one is fine. All we did is grab off subject 372 from the sleep study data set, which is in the LME4 package. And there's a background starting up our addendum linked on the web page, which gets you, does all the stuff before you grab this subset, the subject 372. So you install the package, grab the sleep study data set, and then do the subset. So I put that in a background for those of you new, and then you can just look at the data set. And of course, I changed the formatting to get us here, and we have reaction time. And that's going up over days, as we saw from the plot. Subject 372, days, 10 days. You can plot, get yourself a simple plot, which we show you in the slides. You can put a straight line fit on it with abline. And you can fit LM to get yourself a rate of degradation, that is increase of reaction time, about 11.3. That's just a little above median for this group. And of course, once you've created the lm.sstat object, you can call these objects anything you want, but you're just saving the results from fitting this simple straight line reaction till the day's regression. You can plot the object, get a confidence intervals for the intercept and slope. And those are probably all things you learn in elementary courses using one package or another, but just background R, and there's plots in the lecture things. And that is one of our things. We'll come back to autocorrelation worries, which we're going to, this is the only time we'll really talk about autocorrelation. Here's our plot, page 30 of the PDF. And also there's an extended version of the PDF version of the handout that has all these in them. It's redundant with having the lecture slides in-class versions. We don't give out the lecture slides. We give out just the extended handouts. So here's a straight line scatter plot with the points on it. And of course, plot command will give you those also. Okay, autocorrelation. We'll come back and show you the results of this. This is just a page on PDF page 31. That is a concern in time series. And the idea is that unlike your usual regression, that the disturbance terms, the residuals, may be correlated with each other, either positively or negatively. That is, on different days, some influence from the day before, and you can see in long time series, you might be able to detect that. With 3, 4, 5 observations, you can't. But we'll just go through the exercise of showing you it. But the important thing is that, and this is just back from the standard Nieder-Wasserman regression course, estimated regression coefficients are still unbiased. They no longer have minimum variance. You lose a little efficiencies, but you're still consistent. So you're still estimating the right rate of improvement. You just may not be doing it as well, but there's not much you can do about it. So the idea of autoregressive error models is the successive error terms. I'm on PDF page 32, which is taken from Nieder and Wasserman. Your error terms are no longer IID. They're linked in AR1 to the one preceding it, positively or negatively. And that just causes a little bit of complication in the fitting. In the old NLME package from 20 years back, Doug Bates' first version, he used to try to estimate autocorrelation in a collection of growth curves. And then with LME4 from starting about 2005, he gave up because it's too hard. We don't have enough information and we can live with it. And we have an examples later on, I think week 4 or 5 in the exercises or review questions. Reasonable amount of autocorrelation doesn't mess us up much. It's just one of those things. Too bad. But if you insist on doing it, you should at least see once. You can do Durbin-Watson to get AR1. Of course, general ARIMA models and everything else are a whole, and we have a time series course for things that are generally time series. Here we have longitudinal panel data. We have a few observations. Packages LM test will give you a nice DW test command, Durbin-Watson. You get a test statistic. The Durbin-Watson statistic can be interpreted as basically about 2 times 1 minus R. So a 2.8 indicates a autocorrelation about minus 0.4, and you see we can't detect it. So even a sizable autocorrelation you can't detect with 10 points. Many of our longitudinal data sets are less than 10 observations per person. That's a pretty rich observation set. So really not going to be able to even detect it when it's there, and not much we can do about it. So we'll live with autocorrelation. Some might disagree. AR1 in LME, I'm on page 33. I pulled this. If you really want to try to do things, the old NLME, which is obsolete but still exists, you can try to fit AR1. You'll find it doesn't matter much. With reasonable examples, and that's why we did one later on. So for the kinds of things we're doing, we're not going to worry about it. And we even have from Pinheiro and Bates sort of things. Okay, that's page 33 and 34. Okay, so we fit a straight line. We got a rate of change on page 35 back to the main handout page or the model's handout page. We did straight line growth. As much as we're going to do it, got a simple rate of change. That's our example. And we'll come back, of course, and do more complicated things. We just fit an LM Y tilde T and get the rate of change. And of course, we're going to accumulate those over a population of individuals. Things may not be constant rate of change. So the simplest step up is, well, one step up, and perhaps the most obvious, is a quadratic curve. And that does have an accelerating or decelerating trend, depending on whether eta 2, the quadratic term, is positive or negative. So it could be turning up or it could be asymptoting down. There's lots of forms for that. And again, you could fit an average rate of change with a straight line, even though that seems a little bit awkward with quadratic data. And what we have is hallowed data from the Burka growth study, Nancy Bailey from Berkeley, one of the pioneers of longitudinal research in around World War I time, when this is new, child development. And so I actually have these data on punch cards. Kronbeck gave them to me back in the 70s. And so somehow I transcribed some punch cards. I probably still have the punch cards. Someone wants a different child, but we're going to do number 8. If you want a different child, do that. Package FDA, Bernie Silberman's functional data analysis uses other data, height and weight data, I believe, from the Berkeley Growth Study. So we have other Nancy Bailey data we could use. These people were followed all the way through adulthood for affective development and intellectual development. Here we have months 1 to 60. And it's a little bit hard because before verbal speech, say 12 months maybe, you're doing a different kind of testing than after you have verbalization. But let's say they could vertically equate everything. So we have a cognitive measure going over 60 months, initial value 4, increasing to 228 by age 5. So that's a pretty good span. That's interesting longitudinal data, historically praiseable. And so that's PDF page 36, and that's, of course, in our data set. You can just cut and paste it out and do the fits. Here's a plot. You can see there definitely is curvature. The rate of improvement before by up to 30 months is a good deal greater than the rate of improvement after 30 months, at least in this measure, kind of the mirror or the flip of the COVID data in Palo Alto. And this is cumulative score. That is not the improvement. You could do diffs. If you did diff on this and you'd see the month-to-month or time-to-time improvement, you'd see a non-constant rate of change. So here on the ASCII version of the handout, we have quadratic and cubic trajectories. I just created a data set, BGS-DAT, and read it in back when I did it. You can do the same. And you can see there's my throat. And I did the plot, data from the Berkeley Growth Study. Here's the data again. And so I fit both a quadratic and a cubic. Which model fits better? I can do a model comparison and find out if I did model 2 does seem to fit a little better. And you can see then you get a quadratic and cubic term. You could look at the fits and see the fits are slightly improved. So there's a little bit of saddle point in the trend. You can see the cubic is significant. The T is about the square of the F in ANOVA, comparing the quadratic to the, as a reduced model, cubic is the full model. But you can also look at the t-test, and you have a simple fit. Now, what do you do about a rate of change? Well, you see the rate of improvement is not constant, so that's why this more complicated fit. And you could also do a Durbin-Watson on this. You have Durbin-Watson about 1.2, which is about a autocorrelation, again, of 0.4, same magnitude, but here you're able to detect it because you have many more observations, but we usually don't have that many observations. So here you have positive autocorrelation. You could do Cochrane Orcutt or some version if you wanted to try. There's various packages in R that'll let you do more complicated things. We're not going to dwell on it, but just give lip service at this point. So that is quadratic and cubic, straight line growth. Then we come to for measured outcomes like cognitive functioning, things we could think we could model by a Gaussian. Counts we can't because they are positively valued. So we have GLM version, generalized linear models. And that's where we're going to come from the AIDS example to fit a multiplicative model where the expected number of new cases is some baseline times a e to a time trend, which is going to be linear in the logs. So the log of the perfectly measured count has an offset and a rate of improvement. Could be quadratic in T, but here we have it just linear in T. And we're going to use family equals Poisson under GLM to fit a count model. This may be something you've done many times. If you haven't, This is another good introduction. As I say, first week I'm kind of trolling for things that you need to fill in. Other examples of count data are going to be number of epileptic seizures under a drug versus a placebo in week 4, experimental comparison. Lots of other interesting count examples, but the statistical details are different. Here we have the multiplicative model, which is log linear, linear in the logs. That's why we call them log linear models. So we're going to come and do the AIDS example, number of cases, being our first background example of counts in Belgium. So we have one country. Okay, modeling counts. The trajectory on page 41 of the lecture slides is one of Simon Wood's displays. You can see it's nicer than mine. AIDS in Belgium over 1980 through 94, it looks like. We'll have the full data. We have this number of resources for this. Besides the class handout, we have a link to Simon Wood's full analysis of this, which I kind of replicate. And I have an R session for this data where I go through the full analysis. It's condensed, of course, on the handout version and in the lecture. So we have these data. We're going to fit a trajectory, take a look at it. And of course, we could later on fit a collection of trajectories. We have different countries. This is number of new cases as opposed to what we had in Palo Alto, which was cumulative number of cases. Good model either. So on the webpage, we have a number of versions of this, and we have it here in lecture. So PDF page 41 shows you the data, data sets in our data sets file. And here are Simon Wood's slides on this. We have counts that are Poisson, and the expected number of counts follows a multiplicative model, taking logs as on the class handout. I do the same thing, except my betas or thetas, I believe. GLM with a log link. That's how they're usually fit, generally in our models. So we're going to, some of this may be routine for some of you, you may not have done this much, but counts are important to model properly. GLMs are fitted using GLM, which functions much like LM. Family Poisson, without, you don't need the link log, that's default. Fit a model with a log link with a Poisson response variable. Therefore, the results you get are on the log scale and you need to exponentiate. And I'm sure you've at least seen one or two examples of this, but it's a good place to do it. From Doug Bates's slides, Poisson distribution, probability mass function, you should see what a Poisson looks like if you've never done it, and horse kick, death by horse kick in the Prussian army in the 1880s is the famous example of Poisson that you use in things like Stat 141. And we have binomials and Poissons. And the canonical link is the log. This is PDF page 45. I just put these in as background. In case you want to read through Doug Bates's or if you've never seen this before. But it's deep background. The GLM command is what you need to master. Kanaka link in the variance, 46. This is, again, probably more than we need, but it just shows you how the variance works. And then to, PDF page 47, get back to the course handout, which before I annotated them, we've got the Belgium AIDS data, PDF page 47, or the data sets and ASCII version of the course handout. And we fit a simple GLM family Poisson data Belge age, which I created just by cutting and pasting. And we can then, if we plot that, gives you a set of diagnostic plots. You're going to see you want to do better than that. We'll take a look in a moment. So we fit a quadratic. And this fits reasonably well. You can see that comparing the nested models, quadratic in year fits a whole lot better. Residual chi-square 9 degrees. Big deviance, and you'll see a, do with the chi-square version, you get a p-value. That's less than e to the minus 16. But you kind of saw that from the deviance. You use the chi-square command if you want to do a simple test. And cubic doesn't help. Simon Wood's link looks at that. And if you want to take a nice final plot by plotting the fits with confidence interval, note the interval of fit and CI bands. We just plot the cases and we do predict to get ourselves confidence intervals. Just a nicety, not an essential, but doing that. That's what we did in the R session. Here are Simon starting at PDF page 49. Let's just work through his full analysis, which I did in the AIDS cases. You can see from the simple fit cases year, that is, call that linear in year. If you plot that, of course, like any object, you get residuals versus fits. That looks pretty bad. Should be flat. So it looks like this curvature. Residual versus fits, the leftmost, if you like leverage plots and Cook's distance and things like that, you can take a look at those, but the residual fit is one most familiar. There's some influential points. We're not gonna worry about that too much, but you can see straight line, linear in the, or straight line in year isn't probably the best idea, and that's what the model comparison told us. If we do then the quadratic, which seemed like, which clearly was a better model, you can see residuals versus fits looks pretty flat, as it should, because we've taken out the curvature. So that's just a good little detail. You've done that in LM many times, plotted an LM object in some form or other. Here we can do a GLM object, and that's good to see. That's PDF page 50. So just fitting the simple fitted model, you can get the intercept in the year, and you need to exponentiate to get the back in the count metric. AM2, summary of AM2, which is our quadratic model, gives you the estimates, standard errors. And you could do confidence intervals, or confidence intervals for the exponentiated coefficients would be useful. And he does the comparison showing quadratic is better, PDF page 53. I just grabbed most of his slides because they're prettier. And so, cubic term, if try cubic, as I said, it doesn't help. And he shows that, and you can do that. Doing an ANOVA is not analysis of variance. AOV calls LM analysis of variance. ANOVA is for model comparison in R, and you've undoubtedly been told that. Cubic doesn't help. Quadratic is a nice model, and you can see quadratic model is the most appropriate, PDF page 55. Again, this is all Simon Wood. I'm just flipping through it because we kind of covered it. Predict is a good thing for you to do. Gives you the confidence bands, gives you the fitted values. If you want to make a nice plot, you've probably done that in some form or other. I just included it here and I did it in my session just to show you it's pretty. And there you go. That's a nice little summary of the trajectory. Now we might compare over countries, etc., etc., and therefore we want to do our mixed effects models, which we'll start doing next week. But for a single trajectory in counts, we've at least done a quick overview. Introduced to Poisson. The other main use of GLM is for binomial Bernoulli data, and we'll come to that week two or week three. So then page 58, I did the Belgium AIDS slides. I even just read it as a data frame, got it here, and that's the way I gave it to you. I actually read in the data off of his, did AM1, AM2. So page 58 is just my R session, and those are good things, and they're up in ASCII, so you could cut and paste commands in just to be doing it. Yeah, this whole idea of week one is tread some water and give people a chance to get going, get some R muscle memory if you don't have any, or just a quick review for many of you without trying your patience, I hope. And so PDF page 59 is just more of what we've already done. I just included all those and did the plot. And then on PDF page 61, we come to another form of count data that we're going to use when we do experimental analysis of experimental designs. And we have treatment and placebo for an epilepsy drug, 59 patients. And we're counting number of seizures, or rate of seizures, number of seizures per week. However, and the data is epilepsy from Handbook of Statistical Analysis using R, and that'll be in 2 or 3. 3 is the most current. And we'll look at these data rather carefully then. Just to complete the GLM tour, for Bernoulli 0-1 outcomes, we do the LOGIT, logarithm of the odds ratio. The natural transformation is to take proportions, put them in LOGITs, and then take the log. That gets you a log linear model. That's kind of model you want to fit. That's the standard thing to do with GLM. Page 63 just shows you the link function, inverse link function, what the transformation does. And for a simple proportions example, I picked a kind of old thing. We'll come back and do more fancy GLM fitting. But yeah, university, trend in proportion, which has its own history, doing a prop trend.test in R. It's Cochrane-Armitage tests. And so this is a good old topic, time trend in proportions over different cohorts. The simple example, and in our webpage, we have linked time trend for binary responses. There's a nice expository paper of the Cochrane-Armitage test on the course webpage if you want to take a further look at some fancier versions of that. But we basically have for classes 1961 to 1981, which I'm in the middle there, whether people contributed or not. I did not go to Providence College, but their data are available. And you can see early on, people contributed from the early classes, probably people that had money, contributed, whereas the later classes, this is 1981, would have been 5 years out. Most people didn't, because they're still paying off loans. So I created a 2x5 table of these entries, cell counts, and can take a look at that. You can do a prop table and see at for each class, 61 through 81, what proportion gave. It's probability giving the same for all class years. That would be a chi-square test, and definitely not. We see that. We see there's a trend in the proportion, a trend that younger classes give less because they don't have money. So prop.trend.test is the old-fashioned Cochrane-Armitage test, and we can do that old-fashioned chi-square test. If we had the 0-1 data, or we could create it, then we could do GLM. So I did prop.10.test, and well, equal spaced or not, you get a large rejection that there's no trend. Of course, you could do more useful things with this, but this is the old-fashioned Cochrane-Armitage test, time trend. You'll see it. And so that's just one day one, week one type thing. I used to do this in Stat 141. That's a nice little example of trend in proportions. We'll come back and do more fancy logistic regression type examples for collections of on-off trajectories. So we did GLM, and we also did a good old-fashioned thing. Here's page 4 of our handout. Once again, I keep coming back to it because it's kind of our guide. And then the last part of what we're going to do is nonlinear growth curves, logistic asymptotic regression, compartment models, all sorts of ideas that we won't use that much but are good to introduce you to. So I'll do a pause here.